Back to Proverbs. I don't know how long this study is going to take. We'll just start and see how far we can go. But one of the topics that Proverbs discusses a lot, probably second only to speech, is wealth and poverty. It was a pressing problem at that time, something that the wise people of Israel thought about a lot. When you're looking at poverty in the Proverbs, one of the things you'll notice is that there's a lot of different words that mean poor. They're translated many different ways in the King James: poor, needy, lowly, poverty, want, different words. For rich, there's only one word for rich. We will look at that coming up after we finish this, but there's several different words for poor. The question is always, okay, are they different? I mean, is there a difference between an Ebion and a Dal? A poor, a needy person and a poor person, are they the same thing or are they different things? The answer is essentially they're all the same. There may be slight differences in nuance. For instance, the word Maksur probably has more the idea of just lacking anything, being needy, having a lack of something. Others, for instance, Dal and Ebion may have more the idea of being downtrodden. But ultimately, and as we go through this, you'll see the multitude of colors in your outline. The different words for poor used many different times in different ways, and many times they're used in parallel with each other, and many times Proverbs will be essentially repeated, but one time use a different word for poor. So there are lots of different words, but essentially all mean the same thing. And as we look at these, again, what I did, the same thing as I did with speech, is I just tried to find all the verses I could that had to do with poverty and got them all together and then tried to sort them out into groups. What were they saying about poverty? What were you supposed to learn about poverty? And then categorize them, and we'll look at them in these categories. And what Proverbs has to say about poverty and the poor is kind of interesting. It's kind of ambivalent, and we'll talk about that as we go along. But the first thing I want to talk about is how not to become poor, the causes of poverty. Proverbs spent a good bit of time on that. Why do you think Proverbs would spend so much time on how not to become poor?
Because a lot of people had a problem with that.
Okay. And we think about what Proverbs is and who it's for. Basically, instruction to a son, and the idea is to explain to a young person how not to become poor, how to not become poor. And so there's several different things that are addressed, all of which obviously ultimately are aimed at the end of telling this person, if you don't want to be poor, do this. If you want to be poor, do this, and you will end up that way. The first grouping, I kind of stuck several of them together because the four S's, slothful, sleepy, slack, sluggard, all essentially the same thing, said in different ways. 6:9-11, well-known verse. How long will thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that travaileth, and thy want as an armed man. I put quotes around that part there because probably this is, he's quoting the sluggard. This is what the sluggard's response would be. How long are you going to sleep? And his response is, oh, just a little while longer. You know, if you notice, he repeats little three times. Just a little while. You know, you ever have your child do that laying in bed? Time to go. Oh, just a little longer. Just a little while. Son, when are you going to get that done? Just a little bit. Just, you know, it's a common thing that people say. And here, this is probably the sluggard saying, just need a little more sleep. Just a little more slumber. You know, let me just lay over here for a little while longer. And he said, if you do that, then your poverty will come. And your want, and poverty and want are two different words. Rush and the Maksur are obviously the same thing. It's going to come upon you suddenly, and it'll be painful. So don't do that. Then in 10:4, he becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand. Another one that's pretty obvious. 13:4, the soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing. Literally it says the soul of the sluggard has craving and nothing else. Sluggard has wants, has needs, has desires, but that's all they're ever going to have, because they're never going to have them fulfilled, because they're not going to do what's necessary to have it fulfilled. All they'll ever have is desire. 19:15, slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger. Deep sleep, what does that remind you of? In the Old Testament, a deep sleep. That reminds you of anything? Recall that phrase? Yes. Is it the same word used for when God made Adam fall into a deep sleep? It's an anesthetic sleep. And slothfulness casts us into that kind of sleep. That it's like getting a shot and being put under.
Yeah.
It's that kind of sleep that is not easy to arise from. I said that slothfulness is just like that, and that when that is the case, the person will suffer hunger. 24, the sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold, therefore shall he beg in the harvest and have nothing. The cold, that time of year, getting near the end of the year, when it's time to plant certain things, he said he won't plow. What is it that he's expecting to get in the harvest if he's not plowing? That he shall beg in harvest and have nothing. It's kind of hard to believe the person wouldn't do anything. I mean, I'm not going to do anything in my field, and why isn't there food in it? It's the plowing part that apparently is the emphasis. Because you can seed a field without plowing. You can just cast seed on it and say, well, I hope that's good enough.
Yeah.
And that might be the picture here, is that he's just, it's too cold to go out and plow. It's too difficult. I'm just going to throw the seed out there and hope that in harvest time it'll work out anyway. Instead, it won't work out. 20:13 is a command, one of the few commands in this section. Love not sleep, lest thou come to poverty. It's pretty straightforward. Don't love sleeping, because it leads to poverty. And then 24:33-34 is just an exact duplication of 6:10-11. It's the same thing yet again. The quote from the sluggard. So, one of the categories of causes of poverty is just indolence, the desire not to work, to just sleep and not have to do anything. And you can understand why a sage would tell this to his pupil, or a parent would to his child, you know, I want you to be busy, I want you to do things. And it's just a threat. I mean, essentially this is a threat. You know, son, if you don't get up and do what I tell you, you're just going to end up starving. So you need to get up and do it. You don't want that to happen. It's a rhetorical device to say, hey, you need to do this, because the consequences of this is very bad. The next one is greed. The next cause of poverty was greed, which is somewhat paradoxical. Yeah. Why? Why is it paradoxical that greed causes poverty?
Rushing. Kind of an impatience.
Okay. Impatience to do what? For what purpose? To get what?
Yeah.
Yeah, to get the wealth, what you want. And so, I mean, greed is the desire to accumulate stuff, to get stuff. And Proverbs says that that is actually has the opposite effect. It can have the opposite effect. Instead of making you wealthy, it can actually make you poor. And all of these sayings, not all of them, most of them are somewhat a paradox. 11:24, there is that scattereth, yet increaseth, and there is that withholdeth more than is meat, but it tendeth to poverty. Some people give away and get more, some people withhold more than they should and end up poor. The question is, what is he scattering and withholding?
What he has.
As in, what? Okay, there's someone who gives away his stuff and yet increases, and there's some that would keep it, and that tends to poverty. What else could it be? And thinking in an agrarian context, what might he be talking about?
Seed war.
Yeah, seed. The guy who goes out and scatters the seed he's going to get a return on that. He's going to have a harvest from it. And the one who doesn't says, well, I don't want to use all my seed up for this, ends up not getting a harvest, or at least not as much of one. But obviously it's also meant in another way of the desire to hold on to stuff can backfire on you, of material things. The desire to hold on to it can sometimes lead to you losing it. And then 13:7 says, there is that maketh himself rich, yet hath nothing. There is that maketh himself poor, yet hath great riches. Anybody have a different translation? Because the way this is worded makes it sound a little different than it probably is.
Mine says, there is one who pretends to be rich but has nothing. Another pretends to be poor but has great wealth.
Yeah, probably maketh himself means makes himself look or pretends to be rich. So there are people who pretend to be rich but they really don't have anything. And there are people that pretend to be poor but actually have great wealth. So what is that saying? What's the point of this proverb?
Don't show off your wealth.
Okay.
Or poverty.
Or poverty.
Okay.
Or poverty. Don't just assume that, because we can all get like, keep up with the Joneses attitude. Well, look at all he has. Shouldn't I have that? And really, that person really kind of could be in debt to the hilt. Mm-hmm. Really doesn't have anything.
Right.
But the person you might just assume is poor, if he's really not, he has. He's used his money wisely. He has it well invested.
Right. Yeah, clearly it's talking about those situations where you can't judge people by what they look like. I remember a couple of years ago there was a story in the paper about this, or in the news, about this guy who went into a bank to do something and, you know, looked like a homeless guy, and they threw him out. And it came back later to withdraw his millions of dollars. And he was very upset that they had treated him that way. And then there are people, there was a commercial that used to be on several years ago, I don't think I've seen it in a while, and this guy is talking to the camera and he's like, you know, I've got this magnificent house and I have, you know, these wonderful cars and I belong to the country club and we go on vacation here. And how do I do it? I'm in debt up to my eyeballs. Yeah. There's some people who want to look rich. Following along with greed here is the desire, I really want to be that way. I will do anything to be that way, no matter, you know, if I have to, you know, fake it and borrow and do whatever I've got to do to look that way, I will. That doesn't necessarily mean that you actually have anything. It can all be a sham. 21:5 says, the thoughts of the diligent tend only to plenteousness, but of everyone that hasteth only to want. The thoughts of people that hasteth tend to want. Thoughts of the diligent to plenteousness. What do you think he means there? Their thoughts.
Plans.
If your thoughts are hasty, yeah, your plans. So what does it mean to have hasty plans instead of diligent plans? Haste for what?
I would assume financial decisions in this case.
Right. Instead of diligence and you know, planning, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that and I'm going to get. It's just, you know, I want this to happen fast. What can I do to make this happen fast? It's a form of greed. I want this and I want it now, and you know, I'm not going to plan it out. I'm just going to try hastily to get whatever I can get.
Get rich quick scheme.
Yes, exactly.
That's the society in which
we live now.
Yeah. Yeah. Play the lottery.
Yeah. And we'll talk about that when we talk about the rich, because it has a lot to say about hasty riches when he talks about the rich. Lottery winners. Yeah. 22:16, he that oppresseth the poor to increase his riches, and he that giveth to the rich shall surely come to want. Oppressing the poor to increase your riches. On the one hand, that's kind of paradoxical as well. Why? Yeah, why do you oppress the rich? They have more to take. Of course, they're harder to oppress because they have power. So it's easier, even though the poor don't have a lot, it's easier to get their stuff away from them than it is from the rich. We said that people who oppress them to try to get rich come to want. But he also says people that give to the rich will have the same thing happen. Give to the rich. So taking from the poor or giving to the rich are both bad ideas because they lead to poverty. Because the idea the rich already have what they need, why are you giving it to them? Why would you give something to the rich?
Get a return status.
Okay, it could be some kind of a thing where I want you to be on my side, I want you to help. And it could be the form of like a bribe. Doing that only leads to poverty. And then 28:22, he that hasteth to be rich hath an evil eye, and considereth not that poverty shall come upon him. An evil eye, what is an evil eye? And we're going to see it's the opposite in a little while. But essentially it means greedy, avaricious, to have an evil eye, to cast your eye upon something and want it. People who haste to be rich, or who are quick, want to quickly get wealth. They're greedy. They see something and they want it. And they want it now. So that's not a good idea because that leads to poverty. And the third cause of poverty is luxury, loving luxury, which is not the desire to get money, but spending it. 21:17, he that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man, he that loveth wine and oil shall not be rich. You're probably not here talking to someone who's already rich and saying, hey, don't blow your money, but to someone who's coming up, who's just starting out, say, don't indulge yourself too much. You don't want to do that because you'll end up poor. You don't want to spend everything right away. Then 23:20-21, be not among winebibbers, among riotous eaters of flesh, for the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and drowsiness shall clothe a man with rags. Wine and food. It's funny that in our churches we tend to emphasize alcohol, don't drink, don't be a drunk. The other part we don't really talk about, don't be a glutton, don't eat too much, which is on par with being drunk, but it's a little harder. I think part of the problem is a little harder to police. It's easy for me to say, Michael, don't drink alcohol. Did you drink alcohol, yes or no? Where it's like, okay, did you overeat? Well, how much did you eat? Is what you eat good for you? Okay, well, let's have a debate over it. I mean, there's no clear line like there is with alcohol.
Hearing this from you too.
Yes.
We call it accountability.
I tried, Debbie.
That's pretty good, Debbie. I like that.
Anyways, wasting your money on too much of either one is a bad thing. The next one, refusing instruction, 13:18, poverty and shame shall be to him that refuseth instruction, who doesn't listen to what he's being told, specifically in Proverbs. Talking without doing, we saw this when we were looking at speech, and in all labor there is profit, but the talk of the lips tendeth only to penury, the same word for poverty again. All talk and no action leads to poverty. And I'm sure we've all known people like that who have big plans about how they're going to do this and they're going to do that and never do it. Then the last one, empty distractions. I might call this one fun. 28:19, he that tilleth his land shall have plenty of bread, but he that followeth after vain persons shall have poverty enough. And if you notice, persons is in italics. That was word was added literally just after vain things, after empty things, probably meaning distractions. He that tilleth his land, again, we have these agrarian metaphors. He that tilleth his land shall have plenty of bread. If you work your land, then you get a harvest. But if you instead, at the time you should be tilling your land, follow vain pursuits, other things that will not end up giving you a crop, then you'll have poverty enough. And the word plenty and enough, they're actually the same word. This is a little play on words. If you till your land, you'll have plenty of bread. If you follow vain things, you'll have plenty of poverty. You're going to have plenty of one or the other. Just which one? So spend your time on the things that will actually profit you, not on things that are just empty. So those are causes for poverty. Now the question is, are those the only causes of poverty? Are there other causes, and why does he only mention these?
Maybe these are the ones you could do something about.
Yes, and I think ultimately that these are instructions to someone to try to get them to follow a certain course of life. what other things cause poverty?
You have the widow.
All right, there could be disasters. There could be diseases. You know, which, what am I supposed to do as a teacher? I'm going to say, son, don't get a disease. Okay, well, okay. You can't do anything about it. Don't die. What's the point of urging you to do something that you can't do? And one of the things Proverbs makes clear is that wealth ultimately comes from God. It's his choice to give it to you. But again, I can't say, son, make God give you wealth. It just, there's nothing you can do about that. So Proverbs really focuses on the things that you can do something about. Even if you do all of these, you still end up poor. But these are the things that you can do. But there are other things as well. And as we go through the rest of these verses on poverty, it becomes clear that not everybody who's poor falls into one of these categories. And here's where Proverbs is interesting. When the sage is talking to his son, his pupil, about poverty and saying, you know, son, do these things because you don't want to be poor. You don't want to be poor, so these are some things you can do to avoid poverty. And when he's talking about poverty in that sense, it's poverty's bad, it's horrible, you don't want to be that way, don't do this, 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 and this because you don't want to end up poor. But then when he actually goes to talk to poor people, you're going to serve as the poor people today. Okay? When he goes and talks to the poor people about poor people, he never has anything negative to say about them, ever. He doesn't say poor people are lazy or poor people are drunks. Everything he says about them is positive. And oddly enough, when we get to the rich, it's the same thing. When it's about being rich, it's you want to be diligent, you want to do these things because it leads to wealth. But then when he talks about wealthy people, he doesn't have nice things to say about them. So this is a bit of an odd dichotomy in Proverbs. The poor serve a teaching function. Son, I want you to be diligent because I don't want you to end up like this. But when he's talking about the people who've ended up like that, he has nothing negative to say about them. And we'll get to that later. Second major point are the disadvantages of poverty. Why not to become poor? Okay, I've told how I could become poor, so why wouldn't I want to? First one is that poor just don't have any friends. It's a lonely life. 14:20, the poor is hated even of his own neighbor. Now when you say hated, what does that mean?
Despised.
Okay. I think it's more an emotional thing, like I really dislike you, or
maybe just ignored.
Okay. Yeah, it's probably not emotional hatred, it's just hatred in the sense of I don't want to have anything to do with you. I'm staying away from you, I'm ignoring you. Is that even the poor person's neighbors don't want to have anything to do with them, you know? I mean, if you're the poor guy in the neighborhood, he probably aren't inviting you over to the dinner parties, you know, because and many times in our society it's because they can't reciprocate. Well, if you can't host the party next time, why would I invite you to this one? Poor people's own neighbors hate them. 19:4 says essentially the same thing. The poor is separated from his neighbor. It causes divisions between people. And 19:7, all the brethren of the poor do hate him. How much more do his friends go far from him? He pursueth them with words, yet they are wanting to him. His own family hates him. Many times you hear somebody referred to as the black sheep of the family. What you mean? Many times what that means is they didn't turn out real well, so they're not very successful like the rest of us. And you know, it's that kind of thing where, you know, if Uncle Poindexter comes for holidays and he's got lots of money, oh boy, Uncle Poindexter's coming and I can't wait to see him, and isn't that great? And you know, here comes Uncle Charlie, and Uncle Charlie is really poor and drives a beat up old car and never gives good gifts, and so does he have to come? Why do we want him here? Their own family can avoid them. And he said he pursue them, but he's lacking them. They are wanting to him. Almost the same idea. He's poor in friends too. He's not only poor in money, but he's lacking in friends. Then they're victimized and destroyed. 10:15 says the rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. Okay, what does that mean? What does it mean to say the rich man's wealth is his strong city?
Security.
Okay, yeah, there's a certain amount of security that is provided by wealth. I can put a gate, or, you know, I live in a gated community. I can put a wall around my house. I can put up cameras. I can put, you know, I can do things to protect myself because I have the power to do it, the money to do it. The poor, because they're poor, you know, they don't have that strong city. They don't have that kind of protection. However, as we're going to see, a lot of the things he says about rich people are often ironic. In 10:15, it says that. But if you look at 18:11, another verse which says, starts off identically to this one. 18:11 says, the rich man's wealth is his strong city, and as an high wall in his own conceit. I mean, he thinks it is. It appears that way, and it gives the illusion of being a strong city and a high wall and protective. But 18:11 says, but only in his mind. It's not really. So sometimes the advantages of the rich, Proverbs discounts as being not really advantages. So the destruction of the poor is their poverty. 15:15, all the days of the afflicted are evil, but he that is of a merry heart hath a continual feast. Afflicted is the same word for poor again. The days of the poor are evil. What does that mean? Evil in what way? They're bad people. Yeah, many times, the word evil doesn't just mean moral evil, it just means disaster oftentimes. Many, many times in the Old Testament it says that the Lord is bringing evil upon a people. It just means a disaster, destruction, death. It says all the days of the poor are that way. They're all bad days. But he that is of a merry heart has a continual feast. What does that mean? How does that fit with the afflicted, the poor? Okay, that the poor person, even though the days are wretched, in his heart, he has either the right attitude or doesn't see himself as being in that situation. And he can have a continual feast even if he is poor. And that's probably what he's getting at here. 30:11-14. I'm going to read the whole thing. I only kept part of it, put part of it in the outline. I'm going to read the whole thing. 30:11-14. This is a numerical saying. There are a lot of numerical sayings in chapter 30. Usually they have four things in them, and usually it starts off by saying there are three things, yea, there are four things, and then it gives you a list of four things. And usually the emphasis is on the last thing, like this is the worst thing, or this is the best thing, or this is the most important thing. So we have four things here in 30:11-14. There is a generation that curseth their father and doth not bless their mother. There is a generation that are pure in their own eyes and yet is not washed from their filthiness. There is a generation, oh, how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up. There is a generation whose teeth are as swords and jaw teeth as knives to devour the poor from off the earth and the needy from among men. You see, there are people, there are groups of people, a generation of people, who, you know, don't obey, actually curse their mother and father, who are pure in their own eyes, where they're actually filthy. They're proud and haughty. And last but not least, they are just viciously killing off the poor. And the poor are the victims of these people who are doing this. They use two different words for teeth. King James translates it teeth and jaw teeth. They're really chewing up the poor from off the earth. So they're victimized and destroyed. And the last one, see, powerless. This is why they're victimized, and because they are powerless. 18:23 says, the poor useth entreaties. And, of course, it goes on to say that the rich don't have to do that. You know, and that's obvious. Someone who is wealthy can treat people differently. I can talk down to you and order you around and say ugly things to you. And what are you going to do to me? Do you know who I am? I can tell you whatever I want. Whereas poor people can't, because you know their jobs, their livelihood, they're in a vulnerable position, and so they tend to be more begging in stance. And then 22:7, the rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. And they have no power; they're under other people's rule. And they end up as servants or slaves to these people. So those are the disadvantages of poverty. Why not be poor? Because it's horrible. And again, you get this father, this wise man telling his pupil, his son, poverty really stinks. Poverty is bad. It's a terrible position to be in. You don't want to be poor. And then he tells him, here's how not to get poor. Here are things you can do to avoid this. You don't want to do this. But if you are a father and you say, well, mother, sorry ladies, don't mean to exclude you. A father or a mother, and you tell your child this, poverty is horrible, it stinks, you don't want to be poor, here's ways you can avoid poverty. What fear might you have in the back of your mind about what you're telling this child?
Gain all you can.
Yeah, it could have the effect of, well, then poverty is the worst thing in the world, therefore having wealth is the best thing in the world. It can lead to an attitude of greed, like, well, poverty is the worst thing, so I don't want to be poor. And it could lead a child to have a skewed view then that the important thing in life is to avoid poverty. But the next thing we're going to look at next time are the better than sayings. Many times Proverbs says there are better things than wealth, or to turn it around the other, there are worse things than poverty. Poverty is not the worst. Sometimes being wealthy is worse than being poor. It just depends on what comes with the wealth and what the situation is that you're in when you have the wealth and what you're like when you have the wealth. So, you know, there's this hierarchy of values in Proverbs. Yes, poverty is really bad, but there are things that are worse. And if you have a choice between being poor or being a liar, in other words, lying, cheating to get wealth, it's better to be poor. You don't want to be a liar. That's worse than being poor. So he's going to talk about these things that are worse than poverty. And these better than sayings bring up for the first time the clue, the hint in the book, which the book does not talk about a lot, but gets discussed a lot in Job, is that it is possible to be wealthy and evil. That being good doesn't mean necessarily that you're going to be wealthy. You can be a good, righteous, kind, peaceable person and be poor. And you can be wealthy and be a rotten scoundrel at the same time. I mean, let's face it, look at who the rich people are in the world that we see on TV all the time. They're not godly Christian people. Proverbs, because of its emphasis, because of its desire to guide young people to a certain course of life, emphasizes the horrors of poverty and the fact that their certain lifestyle is more congenial to ending up this, you know, with outside of poverty. But does acknowledge that not everyone who does these things ends up wealthy or poor. There are exceptions to this. There are things that fall outside of this and don't end up the way you think they're going to. And we will talk about that next time. And the advantages of poverty, which are not really advantages, we'll talk about why he's saying these things. And then lastly, the responsibility of the responsibility to the poor of other people and of rulers especially. Proverbs has a lot of things to say about rulers. We might cover rulers in here one day, we might not. But interesting, the only thing in Proverbs that rulers are told to do, their only duty in Proverbs is what?
Protect the poor.
Protect the poor, speak for the poor, be on the side of the poor, that's how your whole reign will be judged, and that's it. There is nothing else. So it's an interesting thing Proverbs has to say about them. All right, let's close in prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you again for your word and the time that we have to study it, Lord. I pray that this study will be profitable to us, Lord, that there are things in our lives that can tend to dissipate what you have given us. And Lord, help us just to remember that what we do have comes from you, that we're the stewards over it, and that we should be careful with it and not waste it. And Lord, we just pray that as we go through this study, that you'll help us to understand what it is you're teaching us about wealth and about poverty, and that we would have the right attitudes and actions regarding material things. I pray that you would be with this service to follow, that Jesus Christ would be lifted up in everything that we do. In his name we pray. Amen.